Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. 5 years ago, Ed Janis set out to capture the lives of Wisconsin's dairy farmers as their ranks dwindled and the industry changed. The result was a series of interviews that led to his book, Creating Dairyland.
But Janis, who for a brief period was himself a dairy farmer, ended up collecting more material than he could use in the project.
And so Janis's latest effort was born. He's now curator of a major effort to collect stories of dairy farmers told in their own words. It's called The People Remember, and Janis joined us in the studio recently to explain what he hopes to accomplish.
In doing the book, I had interviewed people that I didn't get to put in the book, and I thought, this is really something. There are all these older people, generally, who are going to die, and no one's going to get to listen to them. And one is very struck, or I am very struck, by how interesting, surprising, and sometimes quite colorful rural people are. I just think, as a city boy, I'm a city boy, that it blew my socks off to think these people are really cool, but not in the sort of traditional, you know, hayseed way or romantic way of, you know, the family farm. These are real people.
You found some iconoclasts is what you did.
I found some, as I like to say, contrarians. Yes, indeed, I did. And these are just individuals, and many of them are very smart, just like everybody else. And I think city people could learn an awful lot by actually listening, because these are these people speaking in their own voices.
What do you think city people have to gain from hearing these stories?
Well, on one level, it's just basic humanity. We can always benefit from basic humanity. The other is you drive out in the country. You know, it's beautiful country, and you see the silo, and you see the barn, you know, and then you see the rundown farm, and you have a lot of opinions. But you don't know the people living there, or the people who built that farm, or how they made money, or how they found satisfaction, pride. And I think people are worried, rightfully so, about this sort of family farmer, the yeoman farmer disappearing. And that's another thing I hope to help with. He may be disappearing, but on the other hand, they're still out there.
Do you feel like the people you talked to were more comfortable in telling these stories out loud than they would have been if they were to sit down with pen and paper or a laptop or what have you?
Oh, yes. I like to say that I'm their memoirists, because I don't think they would have written, many of them. Now, I have one guy that writes all the time. But
In fact, this is as good a time as any to mention that one of the people you talked to actually writes poetry and has written it on his tractor.
He's sitting on his tractor. I wonder what his wife thought when she looked out in the field and saw the tractor stopped in the middle of haying season. But, George Schreiber, straight from Central Casting, old-time farmer. Wrote poetry while he was on his tractor, a lot of it, in fact. He wrote short stories. I have one on our website of his. So he says a lot of things. He told me a lot of things, which designed to upset his neighbors, I think.
well, let's hear this poem that he's written.
Right. Okay.
I actually wrote most of this while I was plowing. Through time and space, we mortals race to find what isn't there, a pearl, a gem, a golden ring, a fantasy so rare. Though you have searched and have not found, my friend, do not despair. Look deep within your troubled mind, the prize you seek is there. For into this cruel world, there is nothing you can bring. And when you leave again, they say, you cannot take a thing. But here I beg to differ. My friend, you must agree, within the mind are hidden rooms, and more than we can see. And the knowledge locked behind these doors will surely be forever yours.
So we're speaking with Ed Janis, who is essentially the curator of all of these stories. And did you get a sense when you spoke with the people that you spoke with that they too were interested in kind of smashing some preconceived notions that people in the city or just elsewhere might have of what they were doing? Or was this really a question of them feeling like they just wanted to get their own stories on tape?
Yeah, I think mostly it's that. It's being listened to and being, as I like to say, enrolled in history. People like to think that their lives mattered, even though no one knew about them, right? So that's what we're trying to do. Now, sometimes people want to shake their finger at city people. And you say, you know, just because I'm a big farm and have 1,000 cows, you need to listen to what I have to say. But that's rare. People just like to sort of talk about the things that they take pride in towards the end of their lives. And that's what you get an awful lot of, is this sense of even the littlest things, like this picking rocks clip that we could play.
Yeah, this is something that people probably aren't familiar with, and we should have your subject explain it to us of its own merits.
Sure.
We had a lot of land to break, and we broke that with a one-bottom breaking plow. And to talk about progress as far as my father was thinking, he had me follow that breaking plow and throw all the loose rock out on top of the furrow. To clean up that land, we had a lot of rock, some of them half the size of this table, some of them the third size, and then a lot of smaller ones. And we removed them all. Picking rock is an institution of itself. If I might say it that way.
Did you feel like you were a slave or a prisoner in some penal colony?
You know, no, I did not. It was part of stuff that had to be done, and I accepted it as such. And strange as it may seem, when we got done picking, you just look back at how good that looks. Made you feel good about it. That's the only way I can say it. Made you feel good about it. Yeah.
And that was an excerpt called Picking Rocks. But how did you make the case to your subjects that they ought to tell you these stories?
You know, I have to tell you, that's never been a problem. People really are taken, are moved by someone wanting to listen to them. And when you tell them, as I said before, if you tell them history might pay attention to this, you know, we can't guarantee that, but that's really important.
And it's interesting to think about it because at one level, this is about people describing the past, but it's also, on another level, describing the here and now for them.
It is so much so. I mean, I like to say that every moment already is the past.
You have a character named Dimp who kind of speaks to this this line between the past and present.
Can I tell you about Dimp?
Absolutely.
Her name is Loretta McGuinn. She lives outside of Richland Center, outside of a little place called Hub City, 93 years old. And if we could package her, this would be a great country. I won't tell you too much about her story, but her husband, they were farmers. This woman has lived her entire life, which is 93 years, all within a 20-mile radius. So she knows everything. She knows everybody. All the little places of her memories are there. Her husband died in a tractor accident right up the hill from where she now lives in her son's farm. So she raised these kids by herself. Very religious woman. This is a little story. She's had a heart attack, of course. And every day she walks up to the road to her son's farm and feeds the calves. So this is Dimp. What do you do every day now? This is your son's farm up there?
The son's farm up there. He's the fourth generation to farm up there.
And what do you help him with every day?
Well, I go scrape manure. Well, no, what's wrong with that? All the baby calves that are born in the world, I'm the first one that feeds them. After they're with their mother, they get a bottle of milk. And I feed them a bottle, and later on, they have to be broke from the bottle to drink out of a pail. Then later on, when they get big and they don't get milk anymore, I still have to give them hay and water and grain. I go down the feed alleys where we put the feed for the cows, and there's some of them remember me when they were calves, and they put their heads out, and they want to be scratched. That just makes your day. They remember you when people don't. I don't help on the cropland anymore because I don't see good enough anymore. But I used to drive tractor up there a lot. But they don't want me to drive anymore because they don't want to have to take me out and tie me to an oak tree. Because I told them, don't ever put me in a nursing home. Where do you want to go? Tie me to an oak tree. I've had more people tell me, what a damn fool I am that I go up to that barn every morning. That's part of my life.
So that was Dimp, and in the setup you mentioned that she's a very religious person. Mm-hmm. You spoke with somebody else, a former Alice in Dairyland, if truth be told, who that's kind of the face of Wisconsin agriculture.
Yeah, that's right.
And she talks about a religious experience, but not, strictly speaking, any particular denominational religious experience.
A spiritual experience, and you hear this, I hear this a lot. Faith of that sort of spiritual sense that they've given something really worthwhile is very strong. So this is a former Alice in Dairyland from 1982, now a top executive in a big company. I might add that these Alice ladies are spectacular. They're really inspiring. And they really show, which is a subject we're interested in, the changing roles of women.
Oh, the aromas. The smell of fresh-cut hay is still my favorite. I have a sister who says it smells like work. But yeah, it was fun to be up in the haymow, though, because, you know, you always had the cracks in the boards and the light coming through, and there was something about being in that haymow, being in that
barn. It's like a cathedral sometimes.
It is. It is. They call it God light, streaming through the cracks, that it was just this brightness and this darkness in the haymow, that you'd have these streams of brightness. God light, we called it God light, coming through the barn. It was just almost spiritual, because it just kind of reinforced that you are here with nature, harvesting part of nature.
Where does a Vatican official fit into this dynamic? How did he get involved?
Well, by the same way we all get involved, he was born. He was born in Richland Center on a dairy farm.
And this is who? Tell us.
Yes. This is Cardinal Raymond Burke. Recently a extremely high official in the Vatican, but has fallen a cropper of the new pope, and so he's been got a new job. But he grew up, he's a Wisconsin dairy man, dairy boy, grew up in Richland Center and other places. And so I was really fascinated by the idea of what does Wisconsin look like from the vantage point of the eternal city, you know? And what did he gain because he was from a farm? One of the things that came out that might strike city listeners oddly, is that the cardinal, who is known as an arch-conservative in terms of the church sexual politics and all that sort of arch-conservative, is a huge supporter of organic farming. And so obviously I asked him, I said, well, don't you think that surprise people? But he said, no. He said, what I learned on the farm was the value of life. So he takes that to the other place. Right. But he was just a charming guy. I closed my eyes. He was in his full, stuff, red things.
The regalia.
And I closed my eyes and I was talking to a very well-educated Wisconsin dairy farmer.
You are in an unusual position to be able to do this work. There are not many people who are both historians and people who lived even for a short time as a dairy man.
Yeah. I learned to talk dairy. So sometimes the other day I was in a tobacco stripping barn. So we still grow tobacco in Wisconsin, quite a bit. And at first I had to establish that I could talk farming. So after that, we became great friends. I'm going to interview this really wonderful storyteller later. So I learned to talk farming. And it's a wonderful vocabulary. And it really does help to sort of convince people that you know what they're talking about.
Do you have a pie-in-the-sky notion for what the finished product is going to be?
Well, first of all the interviews are given to the State Historical Society. Okay, that's one thing. We're going to do an ebook. It'll have the actual voices of these people with slideshows and that sort of stuff. So there'll be chapters on, let's say, Dimp and her clips from her interview. So you'll get to really know this woman and all sorts of digressions because I'm a very digressive individual. So that's what I hope. We have a website and a Facebook page if I could only learn how to use it.
Are you hoping that there will be people out there listening who will reach out to you?
Oh, well, yes. Hello. Indeed, yes. And do you mind if I give the website address?
Not at all.
So it's thepeopleremember.org. And that's a play off of Ben Logan's book, The Land Remembers, if you've read that. So we think that while the land remembers, it's really the people of the land who remember, and they're worth hearing.
Well, you are worth hearing as well. Ed Janis, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Ed Janis is the curator of The People Remember, an audio project to document the stories of rural Wisconsinites. You'll find a link to the project, and you can hear another excerpt from one of Janis' interviews at WUWM.com.
One more break, and then film contributor Dave Lurson recaps the past 12 months in movies and offers a list of his favorites. This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio.